Citizens, I bid you all greetings on this most blessed of days. Today, our sermon shall be an investigation towards a specific hive fleet of the terrible and ever-reviled Tyranids. We will cover a rather small but still destructive tendril designated by Imperial xenologists as Jormungandr. This fleet, whilst not as noteworthy as perhaps Leviathan or Behemoth, still proved that even splinter forces of the Tyranids can lead to the destruction and downfall of untold worlds. Without a swift response, Terra only knows how far a Tyranid fleet can reach, so they must be exterminated with extreme prejudice wherever they are encountered. In a secluded and far-flung region of the Imperium, our brothers and sisters were forced to come to terms with their new, violent way of life once this fleet emerged from the void of intergalactic space. These planets had long been considered as being relatively safe from the calamity of war throughout our galaxy, and yet the hunger of the Tyranids cares not for your location. If the ravenous swarms of the hive mind detect any scrap of life upon your world, then rest assured that your days are numbered, for the fleets will not relent until every trace of biomass has been dissolved, subsumed, and your planet will be left as naught but a barren rock. Hive Fleet Jormungandr first probed our galaxy in the northeastern fringes of Segmentum Ultima around the year 993 M41. Though they would go on to leave an indelible scar within this reach of the Imperium, we do not have an extensive record of their first encounters with the worlds of man as they descended through the shroud of the mysterious Ghoul stars. This region of space, found on the farthest border of the Milky Way, is considered to be somewhat of a stellar wasteland, with thousands of once vibrant human worlds having been left to cold abandonment after a series of terrible engagements with hitherto unknown forces. Furthermore, the Ghoul stars are almost entirely obscured from the light of the Astronomicon, meaning that navigators and astropaths cannot contact the wider Imperium from these dark reaches. As a result of this, any early warning signals from still functional human outposts or colonized planets regarding the first approach of Jormungandr would have fallen upon deaf ears, for their choirs would simply have been unable to pierce this intrusive void. Imperial scholars and xenologists suspect that this hive fleet first emerged from the darkness of intergalactic space as a rather small and vestigial tendril of a much larger force. However, this primitive state did not last for long. Based on the studies from senior genitors in collaboration with agents from the Ordo Xenos, we can piece together the Tyranids' early years into the following tale. It seems that Jormungandr rapidly managed to identify hundreds of worlds which were only guarded by a sparse defensive force, and it fell upon these in a ravenous feeding frenzy. In addition, orbital stations or small outposts controlled by the sentient species of this region were also greatly preyed upon, with thousands of small settlements being left ruined and abandoned in their wake. Imperial scouting parties sent to survey this battered region of space long after Jormungandr had been purged found innumerable worlds deeper within the Ghoul stars which had been utterly harvested of any traces of biomass. All remnants of the life which once thrived here had been stripped bare by the relentless tide of the Hive fleet, and some had been ravaged to such an extent that not even the advanced terraforming methods of the Adeptus Mechanicus would be able to once again restore these planets to a state of habitability. Nevertheless, as Jormungandr outstretched its malign wings across these forgotten stars, it began to rapidly build up an impressive store of biomass. You must remember that for a hive fleet, they can only thrive by continuously producing more and more generations of new tyrannids, and so they must be in a perpetual state of feeding in order to gain the sheer levels of nutrients needed for such growth. However, thanks to their initial methods for preying upon the weakest of worlds or stations, Jomunganda had swelled in size to a truly prodigious level, and it had grown to a point where it could effectively pose as a threat to perhaps the entire galaxy. Its approach was also incredibly broad. Unlike a hive fleet such as Behemoth, which speared its way into the galaxy as a single, relentlessly charging arrow, Jomunganda instead chose to spread out through the stars like a many-headed serpent, covering as large an area of space as possible. The splinter forces would stretch out to encircle further worlds before crashing inwards to attack newly identified sources of life from every angle, effectively cutting off a planet's defenders from ever seeking salvation. Through these tactics, within 2 years of first entering our galaxy, it had almost completely devastated the entire Thalassi sector, where it consumed hundreds of worlds, condemning their poor populations into becoming nothing but more biomass to feed the seething swarm. Now, in this state, Jomunganda seemed somewhat content with its growth. It displayed several huge tendrils which spread out across the distant sector, seeming almost like a pincer ready to strike at any moment. The great fleet had halted its ravenous approach, with the vast tendrils appearing to enter into a state of sinister dormancy. Despite having developed into this formidable position, Jomunganda was still relatively unknown to the wider Imperium. As I have previously stated, the astropathic calls for aid were aimlessly scattered into the void, since the absent light of the Astronomicon could not guide the great choirs towards the military logistical stations of the Imperium. In addition to the already obfuscated nature of the ghoul stars, we must remember that the approach of a hive fleet will cast a great shadow in the warp, which only served to further muffle any desperate psychic calls from the doomed worlds. This temporary state of inactivity for Jomunganda could never have lasted forever. The poor sentient species of these stars were graced with but 3 months of peace and stability before the coiled serpent finally began to strike. The colossal flanking coils of the hive fleet rapidly began to constrict themselves, enclosing around dozens more inhabited worlds, spelling the suffocating fates of untold billions of souls who lay within these forsaken stars. Whilst many of you may be already familiar with the methods of a tyrannid invasion upon a world, Jomunganda was rather distinct from its cousin fleets in the way that its bioforms chose to make planet fall. As opposed to simply crashing the bulk of their forces into the city centers or strategic locations of a world, the endless swarms of the Great Serpent had a more unique way of overwhelming their foes. When the hive mind had designated a planet as holding a potential bounty of organic materials, then it would begin a rather subtle and terrifying invasion method, which had thus far not been encountered by those who had experienced a tyrannic war. Prior to sending a great mass of writhing tyrannids to land upon a world, the hive fleet would instead hold its bioships far back from the planet, ever so slightly out of its sensor range. From here, their ships would utilize their strange, cilia-like appendages to wrangle onto various asteroids or chunks of space debris which would be flung down to the world, almost as a child would use a sling to hurl a rock at a target. These great hulks would hurtle down through the atmosphere, colliding with the surface of the planet in a tremendous burst of destructive energy. Truly catastrophic levels of devastation would be left by these showers, with entire hive cities being leveled, defensive complexes being reduced to naught but smoldering craters, and even the surrounding landscapes of the planet would be utterly pocked with the cavernous scars of these cataclysmic bombardments. Such was the level of destruction brought about from these meteoric strikes that the world's defenders were graced with precious little time to recuperate, or to even count their vast losses before the next waves arrived. The initial asteroid strikes were rapidly followed up by the Hive with an immense rain of gaseous and noxious mycetic spores, which would most often be targeted towards the already damaged infrastructure of the world. Also, as a rather devilish tactical ploy, because of the first attacks with space debris and asteroids, the defensive capabilities of the reeling defenders was often severely damaged, meaning that this wave of spores would be effectively safe from any salvos of retaliatory fire. As they descended through the atmosphere, the spores would release a haze of aggressive pathogens and poisonous fumes, which would spread out to blight the survivors of the great bombardment. As the spores finally landed, making planetfall, huge broods of wriggling raveners, mighty trigons, and frenzied molochs would burst forth from their fleshy shells before quickly dispersing themselves through the environment. Rather than aggressively assaulting the surviving life forms, these predators would instead use the newly formed craters to quickly burrow themselves into the planet's surface, where they would enter into a state of dormancy. Quite typically, the chaos surrounding from the asteroid bombardments as well as from the mycetic spore landings meant that these writhing bioforms would go almost entirely unnoticed by the planet's defenders, meaning that they could silently slip their way underground without facing any significant resistance. From here, they would form vast networks of tunnels and underground spawning chambers stretching out across the world as a terrible nest. These were often dug in such a way that they will have formed large caves underneath important military or logistical centers, which had been previously identified by gene stealer and Lictor infiltration units. Mere solar days after this attack, when the defenders were still reeling from the devastation, would the bulk of the Hive fleet emerge from the inky depths of space. It would blare out a terrible psychic wave down onto the planet, creating an incomprehensible level of fear and panic within any surviving forces, resulting in many of the more psychically sensitive individuals to simply die from the sheer madness which they found within their minds. Defensive fortifications would be abandoned, with soldiers rushing out to bar their homes against the mysterious horror which was soon to envelop them. It was not uncommon for many merchants or even senior naval officers to simply abandon the world at this point, choosing to risk the punishment of desertion out in the void of space, rather than being stuck on a world which was soon to fall to its terrifying doom. All this fear and all of the paranoia was in no way unfounded. The great tendrils of the Hive fleet by this point would have extended downwards, being positioned high in orbit above the Forsaken world. Here, a deluge of spores would be released, drowning the world's squalid defenders in a monsoon of rampant, tyrannid bioforms. As the bulk of this invasion fleet makes its planetfall, the Hive mind would then release a second great psychic scream, which was directed towards the dormant Ravenors and Trigons. This signal would prompt them to awaken and to burst forth from their tunnels, where they would emerge within the enemy's defensive lines. From here, the maddened and rabid Tyranids would devastate the unprepared forces of this world, with vital military centers falling prey to the burrowing horrors. As a result of this, the planet's defenders would be ever more unprepared to properly respond to the unrelenting waves of lesser bioforms, which would be rapidly approaching the remaining Hive cities. This tactic resulted in many planets meeting their destruction within but a short week of the fleet first approaching, as they simply could not appropriately counter such a varied and chaotic attack from every angle. With that being said, there were still some worlds which were significantly more prepared for a Tyranid invasion. Bastion worlds, forge worlds, or even space marine recruitment planets occasionally had the means to hold their lines against a great attack, and their commanders proved to be vital in repelling the repugnant Tyranids, despite their rather novel invasion tactics. For Jormungandr, however, this did not mean that an attack should cease. If the hive mind sensed that an invasion was to be unsuccessful with this tactic, then it would send a signal to all remaining Tyranid entities for them to burrow into the previously formed tunnels. From here, the bioforms would expand the great chambers and cavernous reaches, forming truly vast underground hives, replete with strange birthing pools, constantly belching out new forces which would climb up to the surface to harass and eliminate the world's doomed defenders. These nests often proved to be impossible to dislodge, resulting in a permanent presence of Tyranid forces upon a planet. And over the course of months or even years, they would continue to emerge, only to wreak havoc on the traumatized survivors. Once these attacks reduced the defending forces to an acceptable level, the surviving Tyranids would send out a psychic signal back to the main hive fleet, prompting them to return for a second invasion, which would always result in the final consumption of the planet. Here, I shall describe some of the more notable defensive engagements, which unfortunately all met their doom at the will of Jormungandr. The first sacred imperial stronghold would be that of the hive world of Sephrax, a bustling hub of trade and faith, which stood as a testament towards humanity's indomitable spirit in surviving in even the deepest and darkest depths of space. Unfortunately for the denizens of Sephrax, the mysterious terrors of the ghoul stars had already sunk their chaotic teeth into the largest hive city. The Space Marine chapter known as the Crimson Castellans had recently had around half of their forces fall to the sway of the Dark Gods, and these renegades were in the process of invading the planet from their star-spanning pirate fleet. Loyalist Astartes had responded to the call for Imperial aid, and they, along with the planetary defense forces, were entrenched in a bitter war against their fallen brothers, not only to defend the Hive World, but also to redeem their name in the eyes of the Inquisition. It is a most damnable event for a chapter to lose errant members, who found a new grace with the chaotic lords of the warp, and if it is not responded to swiftly, then the Inquisition will simply write off the entire chapter as harboring renegades, potentially leading to their eradication at the hands of a retributive task force. Nevertheless, their initial efforts were rather fruitful. And without an encroaching intergalactic intervention, the Crimson Castellans would have almost certainly succeeded in the redemptive mission. Rather sadly, however, Jormungandr had turned its sightless gaze onto Sephrax, spying it as a world simply brimming with delectable biomass. And so it seemed that this planet's fate was now utterly sealed. The Hive Fleet descended through space, launching its asteroids and mycetic spores, leading to indiscriminate destruction throughout the ranks of loyalist and traitor forces alike. The scale of this attack was so vast that the traitor Astartes leader, Arch-Commodore Bloodspite, was forced to agree to a temporary truce with the Imperial forces, resulting in a combined defensive alliance of heretic and loyalist troops alike, who were desperate to avert their new destined end within the acids of a digestion pool. This alliance, however, proved to be inconsequential when faced with a hive fleet as mighty as Jormungandr. the defensive forces had retreated into the capital Hive City to form their final bastion against the encroaching horrors. But even if they were successful in countering the Tyranids on the world's surface, they were woefully unprepared for what lay beneath their feet. Tunneling Morlocks gnawed through the supportive structures of the Hive City as a maggot would tear through rotting flesh. With a mighty groan, the entire structure fell in on itself, collapsing inwards before being consumed by the immense sinkhole dug out by the burrowing Tyranids, all of which led to the deaths of untold billions. With its destruction, all hope for the denizens and defenders of Sephrax came to an abrupt and bloody end. The defending Imperial commanders were devoured by writhing Tyranid forces, and in an act of desperation, the renegade pirate leader chose to flee the doomed world aboard an escape craft along with his most trusted brothers. His departure, however, was done far too late. His ship landed on an asteroid which the traitor forces had used as a small base to plan their invasion, but the entire lair was soon devoured whole by the maws of a titanic bioship. Upon the forge world of Megaia, an invasion was also in full swing. Imperial defense forces and Mechanicus constructs were utilizing their full wealth of arcane technological armaments to gain some ground against the Tyranids. However, even with all of their relics, it is challenging to find any weapon which may prove useful against an unending swarm. Huge energy pylons were erected by tech priests, which emitted dense electromagnetic shields to repel the oncoming tide, with the lesser, more primal gaunts being incinerated as they crashed into the sparkling energy barrier. But this victory did not last long, as the burrowing forces of the Tyranids simply tunneled underneath the shields, forming tunnels which could be used by the other bioforms to circumvent the defensive structures. Every forbidden and experimental weapon was brought out of sacred storage in the hopes that it may save the holy manufacturums of the machine god. Thermal cannons, shatterstorm rifles, and even vortex grenades were deployed. But the Tyranids absorbed everything that was thrown at them. And for every creature that was killed, 100 more rapidly moved in to take its place. The final hope for Megaia was the stationed Titan forces of Legio Annihilator, and with the blessings of the Omnissiah, Princeps piloted the god engines and strode out to war. The overwhelming firepower of a Titan can be compared to almost nothing else within the Imperium, and whilst it proved effective in thinning the gnashing tides, the Titans themselves were still vulnerable to attack. A Hive fleet is ever an adaptive force, and once it had skirmished with the Titanic legions, it quickly began to react and develop a bioform which could counter them. Shortly after the Titans were deployed, a truly gargantuan Tyranid was encountered upon Megaia, and it would soon spell out the doom for the great god engines. The ground trembled before a behemothic bio-titan burst forth from the war-stained sands. It resembled a truly gargantuan trigon, with rows of barbed claws stretching up its immense frame, which stood almost as tall as an Imperial Reaver Titan. It quickly fell upon a warhound, with its fanged mouth being easily large enough to clamp around its head, and the potent acids which it secreted simply melted through the sacred armors, utterly destroying the Titan with seemingly no effort whatsoever. This beast then fell upon the rest of the Legion, decimating the remaining god engines of Legio Annihilator until not a single Titan was left standing. The creature was finally felled by the great defensive batteries of the immense central basilica of the Adeptus Mechanicus, which was designed to shoot down orbiting void ships. Even in its death throes, The biological monstrosity carved a great wound in the sacred structure, allowing lesser tyrannids to enter its cavity, where they went on to rabidly eviscerate any defenders. And it was this which ultimately spelt the fate of the Forge world. By the year 995, M41, Jormunganda had proved itself to be a true galactic threat, not only to the forces of the Imperium, but also to any Xenos races which existed within the sector. Dozens of species which thought themselves safe within these stars now knew of the approaching fleet, and the universal emotion within this region of space was simple. All felt true terror. In response, the Lords of the Imperium decreed that an appropriate armada should be built to combat the oppressive and terrifying threat of Jormunganda. High Admiral Vortigern Hanroth of the Imperial Navy was tasked with the mission of utterly eliminating the Tyranid threat, and as such, he built up a vast fleet of the finest ships available to him. Mighty battleships and cruisers were sourced from the dockyards of Bakka and Sodramund, which were further bolstered by numerous battle barges of the Adeptus Astartes. In addition, Hanroth formed a loose alliance with several of the more powerful Xeno species of the region, with ships of the Vesalians, Chimeriacs, Donorathi, and Demiurge pledging their forces to the main Imperial fleet. Some of these species had previously been at war with each other in the preceding years, but the threat of Jormunganda was too great to ignore, so they temporarily put their differences aside and joined forces in this final fight for survival. Hanroth led the fleet from the vanguard aboard his grand cruiser known as the Crusade. The oncoming space battle was of such scale that the combined firepower of the Imperial and Xenos fleets burned almost as brightly as a new formed star. If this battle could have been seen from a planet's surface, then the dazzling and dancing sparks of energetic blasts must have appeared as two gods engaged in an immense heaven-spanning duel. The bloated hive ships of Jormunganda launched salvo after salvo of acidic bursts, explosive mycetic spores, and asteroids into the fleet, which reduced many ancient crafts to hulking masses of molten slag. The gargantuan Tyranid crafts latched themselves onto Imperial vessels, rabidly chewing through their hulls like a starved wolf preying upon a lamb. Whilst durable enough for warp travel, the cruisers were never meant to withstand the incomprehensibly powerful clamping jaws of a bioship, which caused many a reactor to crumple and explode in a vast outburst of destructive energy. Telepathica officers aboard the Imperial ships identified many crucial synaptic nodes within the haze of the Tyranid fleet, which were all targeted by heavy torpedoes and energy beams. These poor astropaths found their minds utterly obliterated from such an endeavor, and hundreds lost their lives from the excruciating task of gazing into the eye of the hive mind. As a rather horrifying point, when the navigators died, many nearby officers reported to hear the terrible screeching and screaming call of the Tyranids echoing out from the bleeding and oozing warp eyes of these psychic helmsmen. Space Marine strike cruisers from the Death Spectres chapter launched boarding teams via drop pods and teleportation chambers into the depths of the Hive fleet. Whilst none returned, they surely spelt the destruction of several high-priority synaptic vessels from their deployment of highly potent hellfire bombs, which dissolved and ate through the tough chitinous membranes which gave the bioships their structural integrity. As the battle raged on, Jormunganda was slowly torn apart by the combined fleet. The Allied Armada lost around three-quarters of their strength, with most of the Xenos auxiliaries being utterly eliminated by the Tyranid waves. Even the surviving Imperial vessels were left in a critical state. The Grand Cruiser Crusade was aflame, having lost most of its crew and military power, but it still stood standing as a resolute symbol of our utter endurance against the alien threats of our galaxy. Despite this, they proved to be ultimately successful. The Hive fleet of Jormungandr was reduced to naught but floating dregs of charred flesh, halting any potential it had for further planetary invasions. Even though it was annihilated at the hands of the combined armada, Jormungandr has left a sickeningly terrible scar upon the Imperium. Before this tendril appeared, we never suspected that the Tyranids would invade the galaxy from this region. And this has sowed the seeds of fear in all species, that no matter where you are never safe from an approaching Hive fleet. In addition, the children of Jormungandr still sleep beneath hundreds of worlds, where they hibernate in a state of patience, simply waiting for the right signal to emerge and wreak havoc upon the planet's defenders. We still do not know the true extent of Jormungandr's approach, and we can only view its trail of utter devastation as its lasting legacy within the galaxy. With the increased fervor that Hive Fleet Leviathan has brought with the onset of the Fourth Tyrannic War, some of Jormungandr's dormant hives have reawoken, consuming the planetary populations who never suspected that such a terrible threat may still endanger them. As a final reprehensible point, Imperial agents have now reported of a widespread gene stealer cult which was founded within the Black Nebula, but has been observed across the entire stretch of the Thalassi sector. These bastardized hybrids of human and Tyranid DNA are known as the Sons of Jormungandr, and they worship the great remnant of the Hive Fleet, praying for it to once again reawaken and consume the entire galaxy. Their cultists have been known to enact vast digging and excavation operations, all in the hopes that they may encounter one of the dormant Tyranid burrows and to prompt an invasion to once again commence. As it stands, between the awakening signals from Leviathan and from the revival expeditions of the Gene Stealer cults, we now know for certain that Jormungandr is poised to return. Its children shall be reborn with a ravenous fury, and we must only pray that they do not slumber beneath the crust of our own world.